with American songwriter, we had the opportunity to talk to Edwin Raphael over Zoom video. Edwin tells us about growing up in Dubai. He was born and raised in Dubai. His parents threw him in piano lessons and guitar lessons as a kid. But as most kids, that always feels like a chore if your parents are telling you you have to take guitar lessons and piano lessons. His dad is a businessman, really encouraged him to go to business school. So once he graduated in Dubai from high school, he went to Montreal, Canada, and went to business school. While in business school at his first year, he wrote an EP in his dorm room, which ends up amassing like millions upon millions of streams online. He gets contacted by a bunch of different people and booking agents and promoters telling him, you know, this is a thing. He puts out a second EP. That one does the same, if not better. So he's kind of onto something here. That's where he kind of continued his journey as a musician. He did finish business school, but he carried on as a musician, releasing his next record, Will You Think of Me Later? And he talks about his concept EP he has coming out and even a new record in the works as well. You can watch the interview with Edwin and myself on our Facebook page and YouTube channel at Bringing It Backwards, and follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Bringing Back Pod.
We'd appreciate your support if you follow and subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
We're Bringing It Backwards with Edwin Raphael. Our podcast is on your journey in music and how you got to where you are now.
Okay, dope. That was the other thing. I had no idea what this is going to be about, and it's going to be great.
It's just about you, man. If you know that story, we're good.
I'll try my best. My name's Edwin. I've been kind of stumbled into making music, to be honest.
Really?
Yeah, so I like grew up in Dubai, of all places.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Born and raised in Dubai?
Yeah, born and raised in Dubai. And my dad's like a super businessy person.
Okay.
And I was like always groomed to be like that kind of thing and like do business and stuff. And then, but the whole time I had no idea I even wanted to do music.
Okay.
And so growing up, I was like playing soccer and like, I was like, whatever, I'm going to business school anyway, regardless.
Sure. Sure. Sure.
You know? And then I came to Montreal just to go to business school, convinced my parents. I was like, I'm going to go to business school, Montreal, let's do it.
Why'd you choose Montreal?
That was the other thing. Super random, spontaneous. Like one of my friends in high school is like, dude, we should go to Montreal. Let's check it out. Cause I went to a British school. And so like 99% of the kids went to England for university. Okay. And I just didn't want to do that. You know, no disrespect to England. We love it.
Sure.
And then I came to Montreal super on a whim. And then, 2 months into business school, man.
You're done?
Not for me, dude. I was in economics and I was just like doing anything at all to like procrastinate, essentially. And I was like writing a bunch of shit. I was like playing guitar and like writing a bunch. And so like, oh yeah, growing up, my parents also put me into like guitar lessons and piano.
Oh, wow.
Lessons. But like,
that's cool.
I did not care for it. Yeah. Hold on. Sorry.
Oh, no worries.
I have two puppies.
Oh, it's all good, man.
Ridiculous.
We got a dog during quarantine. He's not here. He's actually with my older son at his grandparents' house. He took the dog with him. But I feel you, man.
Yeah, it's so I just got these guys like 3 weeks ago for my sister.
Oh, wow.
She left Florida to go back home. And she was like, here, these are yours now. And I was like, oh, my God.
These are yours now.
Yeah. And it's been great being a dog dad. I went from like living alone, from like having a girlfriend, breaking up right before the pandemic, to then like being like, oh, I'm like fully alone for this pandemic.
Oh, man.
And like going through like 11 months of being like, so like, I guess I'm soul searching, baby.
Sure. You know,
like, oh my gosh. But honestly, super great. I wrote a bunch of songs. It was actually one of, in like a self growth sort of perspective, one of the best years.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Niche comment.
Sure. Right. I mean, but I mean, at least you're able to take advantage of it, because I've talked to other artists that were like, dude, after 2 weeks, I was so sick of looking at these same walls. I had like no inspiration to do anything but like watch Netflix.
I really like pushed myself to like just write and just like channel into it. And it was cool. It was great. I actually have so much material written. Like I have a full album that's like pretty much finished.
Wow.
Probably for like, I don't know when, but
right, because you have an EP that's already ready, right?
An EP that's coming out, in like, and then like I have a full album after this.
Oh,
actually, first I've said that actually, so this is a very crazy
exclusive. I appreciate it. Well, I'm gonna rewind back to the guitar and piano lessons. What? How old were you when you learned that?
Oh yeah, so I had like these piano guitar lessons like all through like since I was like 6 or 7 mm-hmm. till I was like 13, 14, and I was kind of like, I don't know why we're doing this.
Just then, no interest to keep playing,
like I just couldn't care for it, because I didn't really, it felt like a chore, you know, when your parents are putting you to get like, you got to go to guitar lessons, and I'm like, why can't I just go play at my fucking friend's house?
Right Yeah. Exactly.
Like we're down and play video games and stuff, and it was just weird. And then like, you know, when that you hit that age like 14, 15, and you're like, oh, I like this song,
right?
You know, you start like figuring out like what genres you like, you start like differentiating music and mm-hmm. shit. It's not just like a blurb of like,
right, of everything.
Right. And I think like when I was 15, 16, I was kind of like, oh dude, this John Mayer song is so good, how do you do this, how do you do this? And I remember like then trying to like go back, I'm like, oh, I do have a guitar, I'll just try and figure out how to play this. And then it was just like me trying to figure out how to play like songs I really liked, you know. And yeah, but it was all really like super undercover in my bedroom, like no one knew nothing. And then yeah, it didn't even matter then. And then I came here, and then I was actually like writing songs 2 months into like business school.
Oh, so you hadn't really started writing anything until you got to college?
No, business school.
Business school.
Yeah. It's like the official tagline. Go to business school, you might become a musician.
I love that. That's
the takeaway.
You didn't play out at all or anything when you were living in Dubai?
No, dude, it's crazy. My parents, like once I started doing music and like once I started getting to like a thing where I was like, yeah, this is what I do. They're like, my mom's like, you can sing? What is going on here? But I did promise my dad I would still finish business school, which I did.
Oh, very good. Well, that's probably smart for your music career though. I mean, they kind of go...
It's like the classic thing. Yeah, it's great job. Good thing you did it. You good thing you finished. Probably helped you. It didn't.
Oh, really?
I guess it did in a way that's like, I kind of know like how to maybe network, but like who really, like anyone can network. You know, what is that even?
Well, you did a good job of it thus far. I mean,
you've passed
like millions of streams online and everything. So
yeah, which is crazy. It was crazy because I like did that first project. It was just like me writing a couple songs in my dorm room, being like, I was trying to procrastinate. And
that's what Ocean Walk became.
Ocean Walk is essentially just songs that I wrote in my dorm room where I was like, I don't know what's going on. I don't even know what chords these are. I'm just going to try and sing on these. And it's like, yeah, it was like this weird little project. We didn't really mix it a lot or anything. It was really like raw. Like I was just like two takes, like here we go.
And it was recorded in your dorm room as well?
It was not recorded in my dorm room. Three songs of it was half and half, because I ran out of money when we got to the studio.
It's expensive.
It's expensive. Oh, I remember I was like with one of my buddies, I was like, okay, so let's just record this in a studio. Like, let's do it. We get there. They're like, yeah, it's like $200 an hour. And I was like, what?
Yeah. like, let me just do one take.
Yeah. I was like, okay, quick.
Let's do this. Like my record's 30 minutes. We've got this.
Yeah, it was really that. That was really what it was. I was like, we're definitely not making this money back. And then, yeah, we just did that. And it was crazy. A couple months later, like, people were reaching out like, yo, I love this song. Like, this helped me get through my grandma's death and stuff like that. And I was like, holy fuck, this is wild. You know,
what song was that? Your Queen of Coats? Was it that
Queen
one?
Queen of Coats. Queen of Coats just went off.
I mean, I'm looking on your Spotify right now. It has almost 2 million 500,000 streams or something crazy like that.
Yeah, a lot of people really love that song. And that's the other thing. I can't pick singles. That was like a track 6 on the EP. Like, I was like, yeah, this will be one of them. And then, yeah.
Was that one that you recorded in the studio, or was that one that actually...
That was in the studio.
Okay.
In the studio.
But still, I mean, wow. So you had you played out or anything at this point, or was it just still in the dorm room playing guitar? Dorm room,
and I played an open mic drunk.
drunk.
After my friends convinced me. And this is like first year of university, so you don't really have friends, you know? It's just acquaintances you're getting drunk people. With.
Right.
Everyone's just like, yeah, we're going out of this place. I'm like, hey, let's get out of this place. You know? I don't even know your name, dude.
Right.
And it was one of those things where someone's like, yo, you play guitar. I'm like, who knew? How did you know?
Right.
And then, like, yeah, play a song. Yeah. I was like, I don't know. Okay, fine.
And do you remember what you played? Did you do an original, or did you go up there and play a cover?
I played a cover and an original.
Okay. Yeah. What'd you cover?
Crazy question.
I'm just curious.
I think it was like something like The Fray.
Oh, okay.
You know, or something, you know, I was like, this one's for the girls. I can't believe I'm in uni. I don't remember most of it, but this was first year.
Wow. Yeah. So that was your first experience getting up there, but then who was able to convince you to get in the studio and record the songs? Another roommate of yours?
Yeah, one of my buddies from first year, actually, he also had no idea how to anything to do with music, but now he's like a really big producer. His name's Terrence Oscar. He's from France. He was just like, dude, he liked the open mic. He's like, bro, have you been writing a lot of songs? And I was like, yeah, I've been writing a couple of songs. He's like, how about we just like record these and see what happens? Mm-hmm. Kind of thing. I was like, all right, let's pull some money in. Heard studios are mad expensive.
Sure.
Yeah. And then, yeah, we just did that. We had like the in-house engineer at the studio, like, yeah, working. I think it was like an intern. He was like, yeah, I'll do this. I was like,
cool.
I'm all for it. Uh-huh. And then, yeah, we did that. And then it was cool because that came out and it was kind of like doing well. People were like receiving it and shit, and I was like, oh, this could be a thing. Mm-hmm. And then I was like telling my parents, I was like, yeah, so I dropped this thing, and they were like, I don't know what you're doing.
Right, like, what?
you just left home and you're just doing absolutely random stuff. I was like, okay, I need to write more. But then I realized to write more, I had to like have something significant happen. Mm-hmm. I wasn't getting anything until like later, like late 2016, 2017. I went through a breakup. We love those as songwriters.
Always good inspiration there.
Yeah. And so I did. So I wrote another EP called Cold Nights, which was like purely just a breakup EP. Mm-hmm. I was like, let's drop this guy out. That guy did pretty well too. But then at this point, I was kind of like really dipping my toes into like, I like made more, I like met more people in like the industry, and like there was also like a couple of promoters that wanted me to play shows and stuff. And there were like people coming out to like these shows and shit. So then it was like, okay, this is like a thing. And I was like, yeah, I'm just trying to finish uni right now. And then like, we can go full out, you know?
Well, real quick, back to the first EP with Ocean Walk. When did you start seeing, I mean, you put the record out and you put it up on Spotify. Like, when did you start seeing the plays come through? Was it pretty organically or did?
Yeah. So I put it out on, so we were figuring out how to put it up on like distribution stuff. This all like, these are like two kids trying to figure out anything from scratch, you know? And we put it up through a distribution called Zimbalam. Do you even know that?
I do not.
Exactly. I don't think it exists anymore.
Okay. They
were like, you have to transfer your catalog because we're shutting down.
Oh, wow.
I think that was like 2 years ago. And I was like, true, this shit is on Zimbalam.
Yeah, I've never heard of it. There's another one that you can do that too. And I'm blanking now where you can put it up and try to get bloggers and stuff to pick it up.
Yeah.
I don't remember right now. I'm blanking.
Yeah. I remember I transferred it to TuneCore, but I think this it kind of started getting more traction because I like put it out and it was obviously dead. It was just like your friends and like family saying like, yeah, dude, I listened to your song. It's really good. And
I'm right. Like, right. Cool.
Is it though?
Well, you found out that it was like, once you got it on that, what was it called? Zimba what?
Zimbalam.
Once it was on there, did it like bloggers grab it? Like, how did people start hearing it?
I started like kind of cold emailing like a bunch of like YouTube channels and stuff.
Oh,
just like I was just like, you guys are posting these kinds of songs. I will be shook if you don't like this song. You know, it was just that was like my pitch.
That's
like,
awesome.
I'll be shook if you won't like this song. And so it just got on a couple of like cool YouTube playlists, like channels, like Mostly Strings and Wave of Good Noise and a couple things. And then those like, I guess, transferred onto Spotify, and then it got onto like Spotify algorithms, I guess. Just because like people listening to these songs on these channels and then going to Spotify and trying to listen to them. And then Spotify, I guess, just picked it up from there.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So with that, once the success of that song and that record started happening on Spotify, was that when the managers and promoters were kind of coming after you?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
Yeah, for
sure. That must have been pretty exciting. Like, whoa, this is like a thing, like a pretty validating moment, I would think.
Yeah, definitely exciting, definitely validating. But it was also like very like sketchy because I felt like a lot of people just came up so out of the blue, like asking for like, oh, let's do this, let's do that. And I was kind of like, okay, we need to really like settle down and really figure out what are the pros and cons of all of these.
The business school coming into play.
Mm.
and you thought you didn't use it.
Yeah, it was all there. It was always there. But it's crazy because I think with the industry, there's no real like straight plan, you know, like there's no like, yeah, you just do these things and you're good to go. No, it's like really like trial and error. Like, let's see what happens with this release. Let's try this release with you guys and see what happens. And then like, it doesn't like, you set like a sort of standard in your head. Like I want like at least that kind of like validation from it or something, or like I want some sort of response that is greater than my previous thing that I might have put out through someone else or myself. And if you guys can do that, then obviously that's a success. But then a lot of people come up and say a lot of crazy shit that might happen,
right?
And like 2%
of a star.
2% of that happens, and you're kind of like, okay, so this is what the industry's like.
Got it.
And that's like the biggest lesson, I think. Like everyone just thinks it, like you can't just hear everyone for what they say and just be like, okay, perfect, this is what's happening. And like it never goes like that.
Yeah,
so it was a lot of like trial and error of like trying to like gauge how people figure it, like release things and like support you. And then yeah, I think now it's like I'm at a pretty healthy level of like knowing what's going on.
And what, so once these people are contacting you and, you know, booking agent or, you know, promoters and all that, you put out Cold Nights. And was that a record you put out on your own again? Was that an independent album?
Yeah, I put that out myself again. Cause that was pretty like soon after, like the next year, after Ocean Walk sort of. And then I wanted to put that out myself too. And then a song from that also was like received well, Colder. And then it got like pretty hype. Yeah. And for some reason we had a lot of, listeners in like London.
Oh, UK, cool.
And then I pulled a bunch of money, got a promoter, linked up with a promoter there. I was doing everything myself. I was kind of like play a bunch of shows like around, like I was doing like Montreal, Toronto, went to New York, played a couple shows there, whatever. And then we pulled enough money to have a flight to London, played a show there, sold out.
Wow.
Crazy show. Played two nights.
That's amazing.
Insane. And it was a crazy feeling. That was kind of like when things got like obviously it was a huge loss. Like even though it was sold out or whatever, like it was like a mega loss, but it was like, we had to kind of do all these things. I felt like we had to do all these things just to have it on like our little CV, you know, of like,
sure,
yeah,
of course.
We played these shows, like people are coming out.
Yeah, we sold out two nights in London. I mean, that's a big deal. That's a big sell.
Yeah, and like, so it was cool because we had all these things like done, and then I was like, okay, now I'm going to do my full length album. Mm-hmm. And then people were like really vying for that.
Okay. So then,
yeah, I got some like pull in by then. I was like confident by then.
But I know, well, you've backed up, you had the first record and it did, you know, millions of, over 2 million streams, obviously.
Yeah.
And then to follow it up with another record that does the same thing, that's kind of, that really keeps people's attention, you know?
Yeah.
So you did it once, but can you do it again type deal? I feel like the sophomore release for people is always kind of the make it.
Yeah, and a sophomore release was more like, and it's crazy because for me, like the releases are really like a journal because it's like I look back and I'm like, oh, that's where I was then. That's literally, Ocean Walk's like literally my dorm room for me when I think about it. Cold Nights is literally like those 2 months after that breakup. And it's like by Cold Nights, I was like experimenting with more production because it was not that raw anymore. And it was like, we were like trying to arrange more things. I was like trying to like figure things out more and like had a better team like working in the studio. We had like an actual live drummer and like shit was like, I was like, oh shit, this is crazy.
Yeah. This is
pretty cool. And then like it's cool because by like the time I was recording my album, that came out in 2019, I was way more confident in like arranging a song and writing a song and being like, and it was cool because I knew like people liked the shit from 2-3 years ago, the first record. And I was like, I didn't know what the fuck I was doing. So now I like actually know what the fuck I'm doing. And like, right. I'm super way more confident in my abilities to know that these are like great songs. Mm-hmm. And so I felt way more confident about telling people like, yeah, no, these next songs are going to be crazy. These songs are going to be crazy. You don't understand.
Yeah.
You know, I was like genuinely hyped myself. People were like, okay, this is like we got to get on board.
And of course that record is amazing as well. So it's like,
yeah. And that record is like, I still like, I like listen back once in a while and I'm like, shit, dude, we made this. It's crazy.
It's a great album, man.
Yeah, it felt most myself, but now in this musical journey, this EP is like even crazier. Even and then this next album that's coming out. Oh my god.
one that you just wrote.
Yeah, it's actually insane. And it's crazy because there's this like lag between writing and release. And so like this EP was pretty much finished by April, May. And so like that was my like mindset around April, May, like, yeah, this EP, Staring at Ceilings, it's all about like going through like a cycle of anxiety and like finding yourself back in the same spot and like being like, oh, you're always going to be in that same spot again. Like, why am I like going over all this like head over heels for like nothing? Cause I'm going to be back here anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, that was like where that concept came in and shit. And then, but these songs are coming out now. And it's crazy because I was in that mindset like around then. And I feel like a lot of artists have to do this thing where they pretend like they're in that mindset during a release, but they wrote the song like 3 years ago.
Right. Especially right now. I mean,
yeah, especially right now.
Because people are pushing records back, or like they had it finished right before COVID. And it's like, well, I don't want to put it out if I can't go on tour. So I'm going to hold it. And then it's all, you know, nobody knew it was going to be almost a year later that we're still doing the exact same thing.
Yeah. They're saying we're going to tour maybe fall this year, but
that's what I've been hearing. I hope, fingers crossed. I talked to a couple of people yesterday that said the same thing. So, very optimistic about that happening. That'd be amazing.
That'd be amazing. Yeah.
So, well, I want to real quick on the, will you think of me later? You said, you know, with the second EP, you were able to get to London and play sold out shows. And then you had a live drummer at this point. When you went into the studio to do the full record, did you kind of have a band of people around you that you played with quite a bit?
Yeah, I had a pretty good band by then, like set up. So it was cool because a lot of songs came just by jamming.
Oh, wow.
And that was pretty cool because I would create all these like cool melodies while we jammed, and it was all, my voice notes is chaos. And I would have all these cool melodies, and then I would like write over them later and then bring it back.
Oh, okay.
So I was like honing in on like how to write songs now, you know, like before it was just like stream of consciousness of like writing. Like, I don't know what's going on, but now I'm like, oh, there's like some sort of structure, which felt way better.
That's good.
Yeah. And
were you able to tour on that record? Like, or were you still kind of playing those one-off shows?
Yeah, we still play. We did like a little mini tour for that. Again, like New York, Ottawa, Montreal, Toronto, bunch of shows like that just around here, which was crazy. Like really cool shows. And the shows, I think, were one of the cooler, like one of my favorite things to do, because I just felt like the songs were like so much more when they were played live, and like every show was different from the other, and it was pretty cool because awesome. I felt like a lot of it, like we would rehearse and I'd be like, yeah, this is cool, like I'd never be satisfied, but then like during the show I feel like we would lose, like we did not care for the script and we would just go off
had a set list and it was just kind of like, oh, well, this is kind of a guide.
Yeah, this is a rough guide.
I love that. That's awesome when bands do that too. I love that. Especially now, like I was, you know, when you could actually go to shows, I'd be the guy that was like kind of looking on like setlist.com to see like, okay, what did they play 3 nights ago? Yeah. And then you get there and you kind of know what the order of what was happening.
I love just knowing what's
what's coming up, and then like half the time the band would change it up and I'm like, well, I'm kind of glad you did that, like now I'm kind of,
yeah, you want that little excitement because I don't personally like when it's like so structured that it's like, you know, they've been rehearsing this exact script. Right.
Yeah, if you like saw the band in, you know, like I live in San Diego, so if I saw them in LA and then they played Anaheim and then they played San Diego, like if it's the same set 3 times, it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, but I'm hoping for one, like when I actually get to tour in like a consistent fall way that I'm playing shows, fall, like I'm playing shows every other night, I'd be excited. That's exciting.
Yeah. Well,
I don't even know what that would mean.
Well, where were you when, like, I mean, you talked about you were in a bad breakup and stuff right before the lockdown happened. Where were you musically, and how did that affect you as far as what you were doing creatively?
Musically, so that record was done, and I was starting to write this. So this EP was really like a concept based, because I go through a lot of anxiety, and just normal at this point.
Yeah, and I thought, I feel you on that.
Yeah, and I thought I could channel anxiety in a way, or have it as a concept where I can make people relate to feeling all this, like going underwater and like feeling like, I just want to sink. I just want to like, I'm going to let anxiety take over, you know, mm-hmm. where people are like, so trying to have control over like what's going on. And that's usually when you're like most anxious, where, and so this is all about like letting go of that control and just realizing at the end of the day, you're just back to like nothing actually happened. It's all in your head, mm-hmm. and like you're back to the present. And that was like the whole concept. And I wanted to like channel that in like a 5-song EP, where it goes from Time to Sink, where you feel super hopeless, then you go into Sea of Things, where it's like you're in that chaos, you're underwater, you're just letting water control you, whatever happens. And then the third is Mild Sanity, where you're kind of like, oh, maybe I could get out of this. Maybe there's an out, there's an exit. Mm-hmm. And then the fourth song is Staring at Ceilings. Well, it comes, you come back into the present and you realize you've just been staring at a ceiling. This whole thing's been in your head. And then number 5 is called The After, which is like you're back to shore and you're like finally able to breathe again. And you're like,
I love that.
Yeah. And it was a really cool concept. I had like, so I write a lot of short stories too, and it was off like me as a protagonist. Like I went off this like concept, and I was like, dude, you're gonna end up back at shore anyway. Like that's the whole point of anxiety, you know? Like the whole thing is in your head, and we can come back. And so I had the concept first, and that was the first time I wrote songs going towards a concept, mm-hmm. and. So I wrote these songs for that. And I think it's a really beautiful little thing where you can like, I want people to listen to it and be like, okay, yeah, this makes sense. Like this is always in your head. And like, it's kind of like an antidote. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I wrote those songs last like winter, and went into studio, recorded it with Marcus Pekin, who like recorded the Nationals big album and like Arcade Fire's Suburbs.
Wow.
Yeah, he was crazy, dude, in the studio. And that was a whole different experience. He was like really like, yeah, let's just feel it out. Anytime you felt stuck, he's like, let's go back to the top. And
oh wow.
And I was like, yeah, let's just feel it out. Fuck logic.
Right, exactly. I mean, well, he's put out some, I mean, The National and Suburbs is such a huge record. I mean,
that's it's phenomenal working with him. And then, so we tracked those songs there. And it was crazy because it was like right before the pandemic. And it was crazy. It was like almost like engineered for the pandemic. It's like Staring at Ceilings. Like this
part. Yeah. I know. I was thinking about that. Like, did you record all this after the fact?
Yeah. As soon as like the pandemic happened, I was like, we got to put it out. We got to put this out. This is like perfect. This is like perfectly marketed towards this.
What is happening? Sure.
Yeah. And I was a bit anxious because it wasn't coming out on time, but it was also because we were trying to figure out how exactly to release this. And I wanted it to be like, like very special when it came out, and like had to be justified, like mm-hmm. why it was being released. I wanted to make sure everything was justified, and like I wanted to make sure like it got the recognition, and like it was taken care of,
sure,
and not just like put out just to put out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, you put out Sea of Things first. Is there a reason why you didn't go with the first song on the record?
No, I put out Miles Sanity first.
Oh, you did. Wow. Okay, you did put out the first one first.
Yeah, I put the third one came out first. So it's kind of like Miles Sanity and then a prequel to which is Sea of Things, and now it's Time to Sing. So it's like it's kind of going backwards.
Okay.
But then it's cool because people are like, you can kind of gauge after Miles Sanity, people were like interested to know what the prequel or the sequel was, because I was like, I was pushing like it could be either, and then it was and it was the prequel, and now it's the prequel to that, and people are like, so I'm giving them all the darkness, and then we're getting like when the EP comes out, it's like a sigh of relief. You're getting like staring at ceilings, you're like back to the present, and you feel it was weird because I wanted it to go from Time to Sync, but then it was cool to like kind of go backwards and then keep it all like what is really like happening.
What is happening right now. Were you clear that it's going to be a concept record when you first put out the first song?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
I've been clear about the concept since like as soon as I started writing the concept.
Okay. So,
like last January I've been telling people like there's a concept EP coming out. That's and like rad. I've been talking about it since then. And people are like, yo, when the fuck is this coming out?
And so, now you can say February, right? It's coming out next month?
Yeah, very cool. 26th.
That's amazing. And you've already wrote, you set a whole record. And what do you have so far with that? Is it demoed out or have you been in the studio recording it?
It's demoed out. We've been recording pretty much all the main stuff is done. It's like 70, 80% done. It's just mixing and like probably some live drums and a couple different synth stuff live. I think just a lot of things I like re-recording live just because it gives you, it's not just the same thing looped.
Sure. Yeah.
There's like a little bit of like,
flavor in there instead of just like perfect drum kit.
I want it to be a little sparse. So we just have things like that and figuring out who's going to like do the exact production and stuff like that. But we have time.
Yeah. I mean, you're about to put out an EP. You're going to have some buffer there, I would think.
Yeah. And like, I'm still like writing. I've been like in this weird whim of like writing a lot. So even like my writing team and the band's like, what the fuck's going on? I'm like texting them every other day. Like, yeah, I wrote a new song. I have a new idea. They're like, okay.
Well, that's good. It's better than, like I said earlier, people that I've talked to were like, man, like after, you know, a month or two, it was, I'm sick of looking at the same place. I can't get inspired. Like, you know, I can't tour. So why am I going to put a record out? So it's good that you're able to, you know, channel all that.
Yeah. I think Montreal's also a nice city to like kind of channel and like understand yourself a lot. Cause it's such a weird little city, and it's like, I can never explain it to people. I don't think people really understand what is going on here. Like a little European, but North American, but like people talk French differently. I don't even really speak French, but I can live here. What is happening? And it's like really cool architecture, and like the summers are just beautiful here. So many cool places, and like all this whole summer I was just like moving park to park, different like exploring and stuff, and it was pretty cool. It was the first time I couldn't actually travel. So I was just like, guess I'll explore what the fuck's going on here, and like just went around. I was like, yeah, this place is sick. I've been here for like 6 years and I didn't even know about these spots.
Right.
And like
forces you to kind of get out and find what's happening around your town.
Yeah, and it's really cool spot. Yeah. It feels like an ad now for Montreal.
Visit Montreal. I'm gonna run a little crawl into the video.
Yeah. This is book your tickets here.
That's funny. Well, Edwin, man, thank you so much for chatting with me today. I can't wait to hear the record in full. I'm super excited about this journey you're about to take people on. And of course the new record that you said is even better than everything else. So
we'll have to talk about that when
please
get there. Yeah.
I'm gonna hold you to that one. So we'll be
It's gonna be sick.
I can't wait. I can't wait to talk to you about that one. I have one more question before I let you go, though. Yeah. I want to know if you have any advice for aspiring artists.
Aspiring artists? Mm-hmm. I think, good question. I think there's no real, like, if you feel like you don't know what you're doing, you're probably on the right path. You know, it's really a lot of trial and error. And I think one of the best pieces of advice I got was, if you think it's sick, it's probably sick. You know, if you think it's sick, you're not like so unique that no one else thinks like you. You know, you're not so different. So if you think something is sick, there must be so many people that think this is sick. And I think going off that, I've been like, this is sick. I'm sure people are going to think this is sick. And I think that's the best advice I've ever got.